Highbridge Audio presents Grayson, written and read by Lynn Cox. Chapter 1. There's something frightening and magical about being on the ocean. Moving between the heavens and the earth, knowing you can encounter anything on your journey. The stars had set. The sea and sky were inky black, so black I could not see my hands pulling water in front of my face. So black there was no separation between the sea and the sky. They melted together. It was early March, and I was 17 years old. Swimming 200 yards offshore, outside the line of breaking waves off Seal Beach, California, the water was chilly, 55 degrees, and as smooth as black ice. And I was swimming on pace, moving at about 60 strokes per minute, etching a small, silvery groove across the wide, black ocean. Usually, my workout started at 6 a.m., but on this day, I wanted to finish early, get home, complete my homework, and spend the day with friends, so I had begun at 5 a.m. There were vast and silent forces swirling around me, strong water currents created by distant winds and large waves, the gravitational pull of the moon and sun, and the rapid spinning of the earth. These currents were wrapping around me like long braids of soft black licorice, and I was pulling strongly with my arms, trying to slice through them. As I swam, all I heard were the waves rising and tumbling onto the shore, the smooth rhythm of my hands splashing into the water, the breath that I drew into my mouth and lungs, and the long gurgling of silvery bubbles rolling slowly into the sea. I slid into my pace, and I felt the water below me shudder. It wasn't a rogue wave or a current. It felt like something else. It was moving closer. The water was shaking harder and buckling below me. All at once, I felt very small and very alone in the deep, dark sea. Then I heard a sound. I thought it was coming from the ocean's depths. At first, it seemed to be a whisper. Then it grew louder, steadily, like someone trying to shout for help, but unable to get the words out. I kept swimming and trying to figure out what was happening. The sound changed. It became stranger, like the end of a scream. In my mind, I quickly went through a list of ocean sounds I knew and compared them with what I was hearing. There were no matches. The hairs on my arms were standing straight out. Whatever it was moving closer. The ocean was charged with energy. It felt uncertain and expectant, like the air just before an enormous thunderstorm. The water was electric. Maybe that was it. Maybe the water was warning of an approaching squall. Maybe energy from distant winds and torrential rains was being transmitted through the water. I checked the sky above and the distant horizon. Both were dull and as black as ink, and there wasn't a cloud in the sky. I lifted my head to see the wave height. The shore break wasn't increasing, and there weren't any wind waves, not even dimples on the ocean surface. There was no sign of a storm. It didn't make sense. The energy in the water was intensifying. I felt like I was sitting on a tree branch beside a nest of angry, buzzing bumblebees. All at once, the sea's surface erupted nearby. There was a rushing and plunking sound, like raindrops hitting the water, but nothing was falling from the sky. This was wrong, very wrong. Out of the darkness, things were flapping into my face, flicking off my arms and head. It was like swimming through a sea of locusts, and with each impact, my muscles tightened. I was tingling with fear, and all I wanted to do was to turn and sprint for shore. But I told myself, stay calm. You need to focus. You need to figure out what this is. Taking a deep breath, I looked down into the deep black sea. Thousands of baby anchovy were darting through the water like lit sparklers. Blinded by panic, they were frantically tearing away from their schools and leaping out of the ocean like popcorn cooking on high heat. They were trying to evade something larger. Light was exploding around me like hundreds of tiny blue flashbulbs, constantly firing. When I turned my head to breathe, something leaped into my mouth, wiggled across my tongue, and flapped between my teeth. It was larger than the water bug I once inhaled on a lake in Maine, larger than an anchovy. Without thinking, I spat it back into the sea. It had bright silver sides, was about 6 inches long. It was a grunion, a fish nearly twice as large as the baby anchovy. The grunion were chasing the anchovy, snatching them from the water and swallowing them whole. More grunion were swimming in, bumping into my thighs, raking their pointy fins across my shoulders. But I smiled. The grunion had returned. Every year, the grunion return to California in the spring and summer. They wait just offshore for the full moons or new moons when the tide is high so they can swim ashore and lay their eggs. It always seemed to be a miracle that they return every year and know exactly where and when to swim ashore. A lone male grunion, a scout, swims ahead, and if the coast is clear, hundreds of female grunion follow him in, each with as many as 8 male grunion swimming alongside. They choose a special wave, one that is on the receding tide, so that it'll carry them higher onto the beach and the female's eggs will not be washed out to sea. Once a female reaches the beach, she digs a hole in the sand with her tail, then wiggles back and forth, drilling herself down into the soft, wet sand until she is buried all the way to her lips. There she lays up to 3,000 eggs, and one of the male grunion arches around her and releases his milt to fertilize the eggs. Then the adult grunion swim back to sea while the eggs incubate in the warm sand for 10 days. Then the baby grunion hatch and ride the tide back out to sea to begin their lives in the ocean. I love to watch them come ashore, and I love to go grunion hunting. It was a big event in Southern California. In summer, I would meet friends on the beach on moonlit nights and wait for the grunion. We'd spread our large, bright-striped beach blankets on a berm at the crest of the beach, beyond the reach of the incoming waves. We'd sit wrapped up in more warm, woolly blankets, sometimes alone, or sometimes snuggled up with friends to stave off the cool, damp, swirling ocean breezes. We'd talk in muffled tones so no one would scare the fish away, about boyfriends and girlfriends, about summer plans and barbecues, about our lives and our families, our dreams and how we felt. We'd explore our lives and sometimes touch hands under the blanket. We too were restless, awaiting our own high tide. Someone in our group would whisper excitedly, "There he is." We jumped to our feet, scanning the beach for a single fish. When we spotted one flopping on the sand, we'd watch and wait for what seemed like forever. Then a few minutes later, a wave would lift hundreds of grunion up. The wave would be so heavily laden with fish, it would rise more slowly than any other. As it curled, its dark, glassy face would be altered by hundreds of grunion heads and tails protruding at all angles. The wave would crash onshore, and the grunion would spin and tumble across the sand, flipping, flopping, and pulling themselves beyond the water's edge. Their gills would beat in and out as they gasped for air. It seemed amazing to me that they could hold their breaths for 2 or 3 minutes, and that they had to leave the sea and return to shore to continue the cycle of life. In utter fascination, we'd watch this dance. As soon as the grunion finished laying their eggs, they'd flip and flop back toward the water, and at that moment we'd charge across the sand, kicking mud on the backs of our legs and trying to scoop the grunion up with our bare hands. They were always slippery, squirmy, and quick, and harder to hold on to than a warm cube of butter. My friends and I might catch a few grunion, but none of us had the heart to take them home and cook them with a dusting of cornmeal and eat them as some people did. Somehow that would have spoiled the magic of all that we had witnessed. We were happy to catch them in our hands, feel the pulse of life racing through their bodies, and release them back into the warm, salty waves. As I swam, I felt a strong connection with the agile schools of grunion, and I thought I was lucky to be swimming with them until I realized that they were attracting a small school of albacore tuna. Usually the tuna lived and migrated 20 miles or more off the coast, but the abundance of food had lured them in. Albacore tuna are large fish. They weigh between 20 and 40 pounds. They're shaped like giant oval beach leaves and have dark blue backs and gray-blue sides and bellies. They are very fast swimmers. They swim as if they are turbocharged. At first, I enjoyed feeling the way the water wavered and yawed as the tuna zipped to the right and left of me. But when they